Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Wednesday stream.
Hello.
We're back.
We're back.
We are indeed.
It's Wednesday, my dudes. Hello, friends.
Yes, it is Wednesday.
Howdy, y'all. I don't know. Whatever other greetings we want.
We don't really have that many greetings. We have, like, Hemlo, we're back, and that's about it.
Yeah, and someone will knock up the bingo card for us soon enough, I'm sure.
I'm sure there's a... We got a pretty short bingo card having three things on it, but...
No, there's obviously more. I win.
Oh, boy. dearie, dearie me. It would have to be with other creators
maybe,
as well.
Maybe we're more a drinking game than a bingo.
Yes, we are. But it's good to see everybody. Thank you to our returning members. I see you in the chat there, Camelot Crusader, F. Smith, and Mackle in Change, which is kind of funny.
Yes.
I thought it was Mackerel in Chains at first. It'd be a hilarious Alice in Chains cover band.
Mackerel
in Chains. And James Mary, of course, who has been given a spanner. It's nice to see the ends in the chat from people's loyalty badges, too. Can't believe we snuck that one past YouTube, but anyway.
What does the N mean?
It means nice.
Yes, it means we're all very nice people.
We are nice people, and we do nice things.
Someone's asking how the job situation has gone. I don't know if you want somebody. Is it? Oh, what's his name again? I always forget.
Frozen.
Yes.
Frozen gave us a quick meme here. It's for those of you. It only really happened on Monday. So I'm having interviews already though.
No, that's there's promising stuff on the horizon. But I just saw that in my replies earlier on today.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how long it'll take, but generally, I do have a skill set. It's thankfully relatively in demand, so I should land on my feet. But I'm sick of the instability in kind of the UK construction sector at the moment. But anyway, that's kind of by the by.
There are some other things all going sort of tits up at the moment in regards to people trying to possibly defraud you and all sorts of nonsense. So
yeah, it is helpful. I also may have had some sort of identity theft thing happen, but they seem to have caught it, and nothing seems to have gone missing. I believe someone might have been using my details to try and set up a fake identity, but no one's quite sure yet. So we'll see. It's just good old fashioned, I don't know, guff from modernity.
Dare I say it's a bit of crime in a cashless society?
Almost, yeah. Like I said, it seems to have been caught before it's done any major damage, but it's also just a logistical headache to have to go through a whole bunch of checks again. But,
well, we should finish up the shilling, I suppose. Copeman has just decided to become a member, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Copeman.
And also, Chancellor Chieftain's given us $5 Canadian. Here's a donation for the Carlisle Institute. That'll maybe restock the gum machine or something.
Yes, we shall put a Twix. We'll have a machine that just serves Twixes. That's a deep
cut. No, it's the Theakston's dispenser. But yes, if you wish to, and you enjoy the work that we do, and you want to possibly remunerate us for it, you can support us either via the YouTube channel through a membership, or the super chats, or the other super interactions you can do. There is also the Ko-Fi, which is a great way to just... donate to us directly without having to give anyone a cut. And there is also, as some people choose to support us, the Substack, which is possibly something you can consider as an alternative to paying for YouTube Premium if all you want to do is listen to us without ads.
Yeah, we do upload all of these as audio podcasts. No ads, no nothing. None of that stupid the player closes when you minimize it thing that YouTube does.
Yeah.
And that's a good way for us to reward our paying Substack members, but, along with our research now.
But it's not just that. We are also just, in general, thankful for the people that turn up to the streams and watch them and engage with them and demonstrate time and again just how good Al Gore's rhythm really is.
Yes, Al Gore's rhythm is undefeated.
But anyway, we'll get on to the topic at hand this evening, which is, again, a bit of a sort of general discussion, because this is one of those things we could have either done a stream on this that is like 6 hours long.
This is
We can do a sort of introductory thing that's an hour, and maybe in future dip into different elements of this. Because we've done so before with things like, you know, None Dare Call It Collapse, and we talked about supply chain stuff.
Yes.
We've talked about rewilding before and how that was going to affect British farming, and now retrospectively is going to affect British farming and is currently doing so. There's loads of little different elements we have in here as well. Also a little bit of a geopolitics angle. So a lot of stuff to go over in the next sort of hour or so.
Yeah, we'll kind of be doing a bird's eye view of the situation. It'll be UK focused, but this is really the situation in the entire industrialized world. This is the situation in the US and most of Europe. It's the situation everywhere. There's a lot of similar stuff going on. So whilst it is UK centric, it does apply basically everywhere. Anyway, I'll go back to our little.
Obviously, thank you as well there to Ivan Grozny, who's also just decided to become a member. Well, greatly appreciated.
A large part of the food security news that we see at the moment is all predicated on Brexit.
Yes.
A lot of what the collapse that we're seeing, and yes, yes, we are on pretty much permanent collapse watch. I've got the new Britain thing up there for good measure too.
We're comboing.
But this is from 2019. It seems to be telegraphing these shortages somewhat. Because there's an Business Insider article here from... HSBC was effectively scaremongering at the time, but it is true that all of these became a problem, but it's not true why. So their headline was, "Say goodbye to tea and carrots. 80% of British food is imported, so there'll be food shortages. There is a no-deal Brexit." Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, in the same way as we discussed the other day, you know, the revolution of mass and scale has had many effects, and one of the major ones is on our food supply and our food chains. The planting, growing, storing, transportation, selling of food, both wholesale and retail, has become way too regulated and needlessly complex.
Yes.
There is no way really to even try to navigate this stuff simply. I mean, the amount of complexity that goes into being a farmer nowadays just beggars belief.
It is. We'll get into some of that. All of it, but...
And this is a direct consequence of just where we are in terms of the modern world. If we want bread at a certain price, we want vegetables at this price, and we want meat at this price, we want it in the store, and we want it to be of a quality that doesn't make us bulk straight away, at least as things are just now, they have to come from all these different parts of the world, they have to be transported from here, there, and everywhere, and they can only really be sustained by all sorts of complex legislation which spends a lot of effort actually contradicting itself and contradicting the simplicity with which food can be grown.
Well, no deal Brexit is a politicized kind of jacket for a situation in which imports are disrupted for any reason.
Mm.
If there are, say, supply chain troubles, which we've seen lots of, we talked about the non-dare call it collapse, but the 80% figure as well is a total figure, because the usual figure we see is about 50 to 60% of food being produced domestically. But as it explains here, which is very true, in reality, 80% of food is imported into the UK. The lower number defines food processed in the UK as UK food, even though the ingredients may have been imported. For example, tea is processed in the UK, but we grow no tea. When ingredients are accounted as imported, the real figure is over 80%. So really, only 20% of our food is wholly both homegrown and processed, or, you know, there's a certain percentage of certain foods that are homegrown and processed, and it aggregates out to about 80%, they think. But that should show you how precarious the situation is in Britain in terms of the food supply.
Yes. I mean, it's very much reminds me of some of the stuff about both World War I and World War II, in situations where the government had to engage in some very, very clever media and business strategies to essentially avoid and make sure the public didn't notice that starvation could have been weeks away.
Yeah.
I mean, the same obviously can't be said for Germany and other countries during World War II, but just this has become sort of almost common practice for the last century nearly, is to have the country basically in a situation where it could be starving next week. And all that matter, or all that changes that, is whether or not some ships come in and out and a war may or may not be on.
Yes, like I said, the thing that really makes this narrative break down in terms of quote-unquote Brexit, and I see you there, Camelot Crusade, a crash out and a no-deal Brexit. It's very retro almost now. Only 5 years ago that people were using this as a scaremongering tactic. But it seems quaint now that we have all of these different drivers that people talk about with the energy crisis and all that. But a large amount of people will think the shortages are purely due to Brexit because that is the easiest scapegoat. And it's the one that falls most in line with regime rhetoric.
But the argument there, at least in the, towards the end of that piece, is that the customs system would become defunct and this would be the reason why we would starve.
Yes.
No, the very simple reason why we would starve is because we don't grow food here anymore.
Yims, please. Oh, thank you. There we go. Sorry, we have a glass of water here that I occasionally point at like a toddler. Some behind-the-scenes stuff.
We're breaking the fourth wall now.
We are doing. But here's the graph. This is including UK processed food. But even if we take into account food that is only processed in the UK, it peaked again in about the late 80s, and it's steadily drifted back downwards. So we have a situation where more food is being imported, not less. And you think as things industrialize better, as we get better technology, as we have higher yield crops, even as we have from the 90s, this was all supposed to go up. It hasn't.
It's almost as if those measures have come after the fact because there are reasons why growing food in Britain might just be completely impossible.
Well, yes. But we'll see partially why this is in a little bit. Thank you for the £4 super sticker there, Rick. Here we have another kind of piece of the puzzle, which is keeping in mind we import 80% of our food and keeping in mind that number is only increasing. British farmers are being offered a lump sum payment to leave the industry, but at what cost to agriculture? This is something we, again, talked about previously. But to attract younger blood into the fields, the UK government is running a temporary scheme to entice some of these older professionals into retirement because the average British farmer is like 65 to 59.
Well, yeah, the 4 in 10 British farmers are over 65, while the average is 59, which is almost exactly as you were saying with the skills collapse stuff in regards to engineering.
It's just because nobody, it's not because this is a horrible aging workforce, it's because there's no one there to replace them. Making them retire is the worst thing you can
do. Well, there was also, how many people nowadays are schooled in animal husbandry?
Very, very, very few.
The idea is that they can apply to receive a lump sum exit payment of up to £100,000 as long as they sell their land, rent it out, give it away, or plant trees on it, i.e. take what is, you know, and I think we covered the statistics.
This policy brought to you by the Monsanto Corporation.
Yes. Now, I think when we did the rewilding stream, which if people haven't watched, I would thoroughly recommend you go do, the best statistics I could come up with, I think was there was something like, you know, at most, it's 17 million acres of arable land in the UK. I think it might even be less than that, which really isn't a lot.
No,
because you
not.
Think you can only use half of that every other year, but through your crop rotations. And then the government has come on in the last sort of year and a half and offered all these schemes to the extent of which I think something like anywhere between a half to two thirds of that arable land they are considering buying up to use for rewilding schemes.
Yeah, it's for investors, which really means rewilding and fallow projects.
Yeah, and if I was to do like back of the fag packet maths, that would say to me that the amount of food we would import would go from 80 to probably about 95%.
Well, as we'll come to later, there are signals that the entire UK farming sector may be on the brink of almost total collapse. But again, it's hard to get indicators about that. Another take stock point, and this is reflected in many sources. This is just somewhere that displayed it better. There's a lot of research stuff on this. This is actually a vitamin marketing ploy by these people. But what they're saying is true, and they have it here quite visually. It's talking about the fact that 7 years nutrition decline, today's fruits and vegetables are lacking in vitamins and minerals, which is true. Protein, 6% less, 16% less calcium, lower phosphorus, irons 15% lower, vitamin A's 18% lower, riboflavin, I can never say that, is 38% lower, which is significant. And so is ascorbic acid. And these figures get a bit more worrying when you look at another landmark study, which says that there's been there's another one here as well, 38%, 70 years of soil depletion. You'll find that in vegetables, there has been a 50% decline in sodium and a 60% decline in zinc and a 76% decline in copper. So your kind of trace metals that keep your brain working Yeah, vitamin C, all the vitamins are reduced, but a lot of your nutrients like magnesiums and potassiums are a lot lower. And being lower in sodium, we also make vegetables taste a lot worse.
Yep.
Because they won't have their own kind of salt sauce in it.
Yeah, I mean, not to delve right into this, because again, it's a topic we probably will come back to again at some point.
Yeah.
But there's still not like a perfect sort of scientific answer for why this has happened. The obvious one they always come out with is, oh, it's pesticides, oh, it's aggressive farming that attacks the soil too much. But this that seems to me too simple. There's too many variables in here about, well, how do we use pesticides before? How do we use them now? How do we not use them now that they're banned? You know, is it actually the seeds themselves now that they're bred, as we'll get into in a moment, to do other things than just give you food? Is that maybe what attacks the soil?
From what I can tell, the best answer that people have come up with is a mix of soil depletion and also the genetically modified crops being bred for specific factors that do not factor in nutrients.
Mm.
Heritage breeds tend to grow slower and be a bit more condition sensitive, but they also tend to retain more minerals in them.
Mm.
So that seems to be the working theory right now, but we'll get onto that. But really, the only answer they have for that is soil depletion and also the varieties that are grown just naturally being higher in water for weight and lower in nutrients, because that is the most economically efficient way of creating plants for mass market. Something that you may not know about, and something that we may come back to at some point, is some of you may not be aware that seeds are very strictly controlled in anywhere that wants to be part of the World Trade Organization.
Yep.
Here's the UK's guidance on farm-safe seeds as a bit of an introduction. It's a bit of a mind melter, because a lot of people think that this would end the world, and it possibly will. but eligible species for payment and how to declare and make payments online. Why would you need to pay for reusing your own seeds? If you are a grower or farmer, you may use seeds that you have saved from a crop grown on your own holding for re-sowing on your own holding. This is known as farm-safe seeds. Under Section 9 of the Plant Varieties Act 1997, so quite recent, this is, again,
it's not say Blair, but that might possibly be a John Major stunt.
It's major, but it's international stuff. It all came in the 90s.
Yes.
Farmers must declare all their use of farm-safe seeds and pay for their use of eligible varieties. These payments support continued investment in improved varieties bred for new conditions. So if you grow a plant and you save the seeds from it, if somebody patents that plant in the meantime, it sounds like that couldn't happen. It sounds, okay, you have these designer seeds, you have these seed producers and breeders that make expensive crossbreeds and genetically modified organisms, therefore you should pay them for their intellectual property to make sure that market exists.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the excuse here.
We'll touch the IP issue a few more times in some of these examples. I would actually be, because it's not something I tend to really delve into too much myself, I know AA likes a little bit of the IP loss sometimes. I would like to see what other people say to this as a response, you know, and not just like one line of that real IP has never been tried. You know, why is it that the case law, say, for example, that's involved in something like the, you know, this Plant Varieties Act,
yeah,
be a legitimate instance of IP an illegitimate instance of IP being done proper?
Yes. Well, it gets worse. The problem is to sell seeds in the UK, they need to be certified.
Yep.
You need to certify seeds for marketing. And this, again, is part of the same World Trade Organization initiative. And to become certified, there are a lot of hoops to jump through. And basically, the system is set up so large agribusiness companies like Monsanto can get their seeds certified, but not anyone else. This is, by the way, you have to have your seeds certified, not just to market them commercially, but to even give them away.
Yes.
To give them to another farmer, they must be certified. And the certification process not only involves the quote-unquote safety of the product, it also involves the homogeneity and the yield of the product.
I mean, think of the arrogance of man and all his machinations that for thousands of years, we have grown food, the plant grows, comes to fruition, we take the crop from it, and then depending on whether it's male or female, we get seeds. We put these seeds in the ground and we grow the plant again. And they have decided that no, you can't do this anymore. the seeds are copyrighted because we sold you the original seeds, or let's actually design them so that they can't develop seeds.
Well, as the this is actually an article from DW, which is pretty good. But it's very hard to sell seeds or produce food that is not from quote-unquote optimum varieties. This is part of the reason why vitamins and nutrients are dropping in food, is because all of the food varieties and all of the legislation around food varieties is geared towards large government-linked, largely government-backed in most places, agricultural conglomerates that declare what is and isn't quote-unquote appropriate crops.
Yep.
So what you can plant is fully controlled, one, by central government, and by extension by the large agribusiness providers. And the ideal for this and the real upshot of it is that you can't use heritage breeds and you can't use seeding plants that don't have somebody else's IP attached to them. It is quite literally made heritage style farming and then selling those goods illegal.
Well, I also consider it as, you know, say for example you buy a head of sheep from someone,
yeah,
and they are, you know, they are these sheep that specifically give you, you know, their bread to produce wool, as opposed to a sort of more lambing based sheep,
yeah.
And then you have lambs, and you have these sheep grow up, and then like the farmer you bought the head of sheep comes to you and says, "Oh, those are my patented sheep, by the way. I'm having the byproduct that you bred from these sheep." It's such a nonsense concept.
It is a complete nonsense. I've highlighted a few things here because there's a lot of stuff in this. It's a lot of, again, interlocking provisions.
I'll just scroll up a bit so we can get a little bit more context. World Trade Organization requires member states, virtually all the world's nations, to have some form of legislating protecting plant varieties. More and more of them are fulfilling this requirement by signing up to the International Union for the Protection of New Varieties of Plants, UPOV, which places limits on the production, sale and exchange of seeds. UPOV and agribusinesses such as Bayer say the restrictions they impose encourage innovation by allowing breeders a temporary monopoly to profit from the new plant varieties they develop without competition. I mean, we know this already is a big scam and
it's
American
exactly the same thing as the pharmaceutical stuff, though, yes.
It means, then, that they're able to control the way in which the variety is commercialised and they can get a return on the investment they make, because it takes anything up to 10 or 15 years to develop a new variety, said Peter Button, Vice Secretary General of UPOV. Again, how do people end up with this mindset? There's profit in food. People need to eat. You don't have to engage in measures that mean that, oh, for 10 or 15 years, you get to monopolize, you know, this one of five grains you can legally grow in the world to make money out of it. If farming has got to a point where you not being able to monopolize a grain means you can't make money out of it, maybe we need to reconsider how we go about it.
The optimum part here, though, is that, but to meet UPOV criteria, commercial seeds must be genetically distinct, uniform, and stable. Most ordinary seeds are none of these things, which is true. The legislation is meant to lock people specifically into these breeder varieties. These are the seeds that you can get licenses for, and all other seeds are no longer licensed. Therefore, Bayer and all the other agribusiness companies have a monopoly on seeds. The varieties ordinary farmers develop and those handed down to generations are genetically diverse and continually evolving. Unable to meet these criteria, farmers not only lack intellectual property rights to the plant varieties they breed themselves, in many countries their varieties can't be certified as seeds at all, and that's true in the UK. In addition to plant variety protection, seed marketing laws in many countries forbid the sale and often even sharing of seeds that haven't been certified to meet standards, such as a high commercial yield under industrial farming conditions. Often the only legal option is to buy seeds from corporate agribusiness, and that means more and more and more of the world's food relies on less and less genetic diversity. It's worse than this because reading around this, I don't have all of it.
I mean, this to me as well smacks of the classic conversation you hear from the big investment banks about risk management.
Yes.
You know, if you aggregate everything under BlackRock, somehow you've aggregated all the risk, So there's no risk, except from the fact that if BlackRock goes down, then there's complete risk, because then everything goes with them.
Here's an example, and it's an example that's happened multiple times. There'll be a heritage breed that will be commercially available that someone has developed over many generations that is non-homogenous.
I see someone in chat there saying, without doxing myself too hard, this is my specialist area of knowledge. Shit's absolutely fucked. I mean, feel free to get in touch with us. We are more than happy to keep your identity anonymous if the information you're willing to supply on this is useful and doesn't incriminate yourself.
Yeah, please do feel free to reach out via any of our communication platforms. You can keep the information as anonymized as you want. But it'd be good to hear from people on the sharp end of this, as I do have contact with some people in agriculture, but I don't have a very full picture. It's not really my subject area. But to go into a worked example, what will happen is that Monsanto will buy up a bunch of seeds. They'll crossbreed two people's heritage varieties, which can't be IP'd, and then they'll GMO them into a version that is homogenous, that meets these needs. And then they will say, look, I've created this miracle new variety of wheat. It is 3% better yield in terms of weight. It doesn't matter how many nutrients are in it. Please certify this. And all of the varieties of wheat that have less yield, please decertify, because this will make your country's food security better. And that happens continuously. There's other articles about this as well, but a large amount of, quote unquote, seed IP is just stolen. They didn't breed wheat for thousands of years.
No.
Like other people did. They didn't breed, together all different varieties, like, say, 17th and 18th century UK farmers.
Let's not go down to the conspiracy theory of who offered the Caucasian man the first grains, and the first malts.
Still, though.
And longhoused them originally.
The idea of seed IP is ridiculous because it's built on thousands of years of other people's efforts.
Yeah,
like you said, it's like pig IP.
Or like IP in your compost or something.
Yeah.
You ate my food, so that shit's mine.
Yes. It is an insane system, but this is how basically all of Western farming is done, with a complete monopoly. Like, they have effectively outlawed the old methods of seed production and food production. And it was done so in the 90s, and people just didn't notice because they aren't farmers anymore.
This is IP law manipulation and rent seeking in the most extreme, and only continues because people mostly don't know about it. Because farming's a complex industry. It's hard to garner real, tactful information about it online, at least at first glance. In the mid-90s, there was a quiet revolution in farming which made it illegal to grow food not provided by Bayer, Monsanto, or any other of the large agricultural giants. These further seed laws are just cementing that already existing relationship. This was not done through commercial monopolies, but via legislation
and trade bodies,
and political backhanders. Yeah. I mean, one of the most egregious ones, and we've got an example from like all the way back in 2009.
Yes.
From the Organic Consumers Association, Planting Peace. From the start of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, OCA has been tracking the opportunities for Monsanto, a well-known war profiteer, Agent Orange Vietnam, to take advantage of the current occupations. These include pushing glyphosate, Monsanto's Roundup herbicide for poppy eradication in Afghanistan.
I'm trying to get this to fit on screen. It's just not working. I'm not adjusting the window, though.
In Afghanistan, and opening the Iraqi market to the patenting of plants and seed while preventing farmers from saving registered seed varieties. Vanity Fair reported last year, in Iraq, the groundwork has been laid to protect the patents of Monsanto and other GM seed companies. One of L. Paul Bremer's last acts as head of the Coalition Provisional Authority was an order stipulating that farmers shall be prohibited from reusing seeds of protected varieties. Monsanto has said that it has no interest in doing business in Iraq, but should the company change its mind, the American-style law is already in place. And then if you scroll down to the
This is an American law. This all stems from America.
Yeah, well, we can just... In fact, Monsanto's already been doing business in Iraq. According to a 2004 USAID transition plan for the agriculture sector in Iraq, all the major international players in the pesticide field are now present in Iraq. Dow, Syngenta, DuPont, Bayer, Monsanto, blah, blah, blah. Monsanto's latest opportunity to do business in the US-occupied territories has been created by the National Guard's agri-business development teams. The Missouri National Guard, which has maintained agri-business development teams in Nangarhar province in Afghanistan since fall 2007, hosted Safi Mohammed Hussein, agriculture director of Afghanistan's province, on a recent visit to Missouri while in St. Louis. Safi toured the headquarters of biotech giant Monsanto. Well, so we know they have a proven history that not only do they do this domestically, large organizations like Monsanto work hand in hand with the US government to make sure that the GAE can oversee the world food supply.
America has banned agriculture.
Yes.
Globally. American hegemony is used to control the use of traditional agriculture. And unfortunately, all of this is reframed as a third worldist issues with indigenous knowledge trying to make people look stupid for not wanting to buy Monsanto seeds. Yep. That is the main way this is framed. We're not going to go into some of those articles because they're quite pathetic. But in the other article, I forgot to mention, there's a section that points out that 75% of all kind of pre-GM crop varieties are gone. They are no longer in the marketplace. So 75% reduction of all of the varieties you use in the 20th century. But one in four historic German vegetables are extinct, which is an upshot of that. A lot of the varieties of old-style vegetables are just not grown anymore.
No.
And that's an outgrowth of that. But yeah, 75% is the figure for plants that are no longer grown that were grown in, say, 1900, which is mad. Mm. There's a report here which is quite good, actually, from the British Ecology Society, which talks about post-war changes in arable farming and biodiversity in Great Britain. And basically, they put a lot of the blame on the feet of not climate change, but universal cultivars. In fact, the seed system is in for quite a bit of abuse in this one.
I mean, look at the first point in that summary there, though. Agriculture represents the dominant land use throughout much of Western Europe. I mean, that's definitely not true today.
No.
I'm not even sure if that was true in 2002. The most dominant land use in Europe was probably housing.
Agriculture in some places is huge. You got to think there's large.
I actually mean in terms of the amount of land that is arable and used to grow things. That's become a shockingly small portion of the land.
It's still a large part of, say, habitats in Britain. Square foot wise, it's a lot.
As I'm saying, you would have to do some weird sort of bracketing to get that statistic, I think.
Yes.
Farming practices have become increasingly intensive in the post-war period, with a dramatic reduction in landscape diversity. Since 1945, there's been a 65% decline in the number of farms, a 77% decline in farm labour, and an almost fourfold increase in total yield. Farms have become more specialised, the greatly increased use of machinery has made operations quicker and more efficient. This has resulted in removal of 50% of the hedgerow stock. Autumn sowing of crops has become predominant, with winter stubbles now far less prevalent. Not anymore. The number and extent of chemical applications has increased greatly, but the net amount applied and their persistence has decreased in recent years.
Well, a large part of it is just industrial farming is suicidal to much of the soil. It just is. It's like thermodynamics. You can't leach nutrients out of it in an unlimited fashion, and you can't keep replenishing it with artificial fertilizers without the soil becoming, you know, one-dimensional, as it were. It gets the nitrogens, it grows the crops, but there's not anything else in it. But I just want to highlight this. I don't have the bit, I don't want to go into too much detail here, but they do single out the lack of crop diversity as a major driver of a lack of biodiversity.
I also consider the point that as the division of labour becomes more specialised and we have less people engaging in food production as opposed to more, and that this has a greater sort of technical involvement within it, that this kind of goes to show one of those areas where economics kind of becomes useless.
Yes, it does.
Because, you know, you would generally think more efficiency, growing more food, having less people work the same or more amount of land must be better. But the way in which you have to develop techniques to make that feasible then means that the food you grow at the end is actually useless.
It is, yes. Effectively, yes. Well, we've talked about the seed wars. We've talked about, you know, go after your own research. It is that bad. But basically, yes, it is illegal to not grow Monsanto seeds. And it is illegal to reuse Monsanto seeds if your crop produces seeds. It is hilarious. The situation's terrible. But it has only been that way since the 90s. It is not something that has been with us throughout the entire post-war period. And it does represent a large break with the way agriculture has been done, even in the mid-20th century. But a large part of the other issues we see in food security are due to long supply chains and globalization itself. As we talked about, that 80% figure of imported food is dramatic, and disruption in any way will create problems with that. But globalization and long supply lines, unnecessarily long supply lines, really, produces another problem, which is disease transmission.
Yep.
Especially when you come from third world disease factories like India and China. It is a testament to kind of, I think, geopolitical stupidity that people don't realize that China is not our enemy. At least not, they are not our enemy de facto, in that we are so linked to them and we send so much money to create their infrastructure to China that the idea that we are in meaningful competition with them is not true. We are not in meaningful competition with China.
It's similar to what I've suggested to a number of people when they talk about the US and China being at loggerheads. Both of their economies don't work if they aren't, you know, they are so interdependent on one another that even anything approaching a tariff or restriction on trade from one to the other, or one or the other defaulting on debts, would cause ruin, you know, for both parties. It's a sort of null kind of deal, really. And it would be the same sense in a lot of in terms of food sovereignty or guaranteeing a supply chain of food. Such a high level of interdependence not only brews problems like avian flu, or whether or not it's actually there or not, but presuming it is. But on top of that, there's the logistics, there's the customs, there's even further chemical intensive processes you've got to do. I mean, as I discovered in America last year, even just to get food in and around America, they have to put so much crap in it that it's barely food.
It's barely edible. The issue here is that China is just a massive disease factory. If China genuinely were like a competitor to the West, if it wasn't de facto controlled by Western interests, which it is, we wouldn't trade with China. China would be sectioned off like a biohazard, because it is a biohazard. China can't farm. China can't create pharmaceuticals. China is useless at everything and a giant risk to the rest of the world.
Well, you basically describe it as China, once again, been a petri dish for animal disease due to its livestock conditions.
It's just a horrible place, and it would actually be sectioned off.
We should have got one of those horrible videos that appear on Twitter of what looked like the 15-story like parking block buildings
for the pig farms.
Pigs.
Yeah.
Oh no.
That is the end point of industrial farming. It is both anti-human and anti-wildlife.
The weird headless chickens that are just like egg bags.
How awful. Anyway, why is there an egg shortage? Shopper can expect several months of low supplies. This is from May this year, but we also had one, I believe, as well. I had one from the BBC in 2019, but this has been, 2020. But this has been a long-running problem on and off for the last few years. 2022 through 2023, we've almost had a year of solid disruption in terms of eggs. But the Americans have got it badly in California. I know a lot of people were paying the equivalent of like $3-4 an egg in some places.
Although, I mean, we're paying 25 pence an egg now, and even then the quality is still
low.
Noticeably lowering across time. It's becoming quite obvious that not only are they having to jack the price up, but they're also having to get every single egg they can out there.
Well, partially this is to do with China being a petri dish of bird flu, but it is also to do with the associated bird lockdowns that were done that damaged the farming industry, whilst also not providing assistance. A large picture we will see, we'll talk about it during the energy crisis stuff, but a large picture we will see is that the farming sector has been left to collapse because of all the environmental stuff, all the green stuff going on, which we won't really touch on as much. I've put a little bit in here, but we've talked about the green, quote-unquote, impact on farming previously. But because of that, I believe that there is a deliberate attempt to oust people from farming in especially Western Europe, because that makes their job easier. I mean, it means they don't have to do explicit ways of getting rid of people. They can just do implicit ways. A lot of this is the screws being turned on farming in general. But it's a confluence, really, of the bird flu, of the just the rising cost of supplies and feed, because of American geopolitics, and also because of, again, the associated rise in energy prices. But also, it's just because the bird flu and all of that altogether has made it all break down. A lot of people are closing farms. They're not re-upping on number of birds. It's just become chaos. Farming relies on stability.
Mm.
And as the world becomes more unstable, farming becomes more unviable because of its long time horizons. It is a manifestation of the time preference perversion
yes.
of modernity, because farming needs a you know, kind of low time preference, long time horizon approach. It depends on the future. Your yields are months, if not years, down the line, and you're making decisions that will only reap profits, literally reap profits, over months and years.
If not decades.
If not decades, yes. And farming has not been profitable in the UK for a long time, is now becoming unviable.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the examples you're going to go into here in a second.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been sort of 2022-ish at some point when we were sort of just coming out of lockdown, going into yeah. energy crisis. The government started doing all these initiatives about, X different sort of businesses were going to essentially subsidise electricity for them. And they told industries across Britain, look, do what you've got to do, raise your prices, and a couple of months we'll come in and we'll help you.
Yeah.
And they did come in and help some businesses, like Pure Gym and Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
But the people that grow the food, who have to spend a fortune, especially if they're growing fruit and veg in the UK, on artificial lights and heaters and all these things to modulate the environment that they're growing the food in, they decided not to give the farmers any money.
No, because apparently farming is not energy intensive, which is farm storage especially is energy intensive. But agriculture is expected not to be classified as the high energy sector as part of the energy bills discount scheme announced by the government this week. This is why tomatoes disappeared for a while.
And peppers and all sorts of stuff, because the farmers put the prices up. The shop said, we don't want to buy at that price. And the farmer said, well, the government's making us pay this much for electricity. If we sell them any cheaper, we've got to shut down and there'll be no food. And instead of the shops
yeah.
or the government coming in and saying, well, in this one instance, we'll throw you a little bit of money to make sure food makes it to the shelves, they said no, and it all got binned.
Yeah, basically the whole crops that were grown in like polytunnels and greenhouses, which aren't as energy intensive as some people think they are. They per unit, they're not, but on scale, they are.
Yes.
And it's a way of stopping our supply lines being too long, is greenhousing like this. And there's a lot of, ooh, sustainability, ooh, climate change, ooh, energy usage, but it's been viable for decades at this point. And it wasn't the imports that were not coming in. Oh, no. Brexit trucks. It was the fact that basically a lot of UK farmers have been allowed to go to the wall in the meantime. And that it's not, just, like I said in the other article, it's not just an on-off switch. You can't just turn farming off and turn it back on again.
No.
And this is going to be a problem moving forward. But yeah, the supermarkets as well basically just let one, food rot and farmers go out of business basically for like a penny a unit. It would not have put them out of business. It shows, one, the short-sightedness of like fast-term managerialism, and two, the way that people are not held to account. Because in previous eras, if this was 1950s Britain, the head of the...
People to get pilloried in the street for
like
that.
You'd actually see, you know, the family who ran, you know, Tesco or something, they'd actually get shunned in polite circles and shouted at in impolite circles. But unfortunately, we don't live in a... we don't have the veneer of public service anymore. And that really was the only thing keeping the wheels on in most of Britain, was yep. was the cricket principle, really. And the upshot is, this was in December 2022, but UK sleepwalking to food supply crisis, says Farming Union. UK, the government must step in to help farmers, the National Farmers Union warned. Yields of tomatoes and other crops will likely slump into record lows this year, it said, with potential supply problems ahead, as already seen with eggs. Soaring fuel and fertilizer feed costs were putting farmers under severe pressure, it added. What happened is that the UK market was destroyed by the fact that the UK decided to spite itself to boost Russia's economy.
Scroll down there a little bit more. where are we? Yeah, it says yields of energy-intensive crops like tomatoes, cucumbers, and pears were likely to hit their lowest level this year since records began in 1995. It also said milk prices were likely to fall below the cost of production, while beef farmers were considering reducing the number of cows they breed.
Those two are very deliberate.
Rising costs were to blame, it said, with fertiliser prices for farmers more than tripling since 2019, the cost of feed and diesel up by 75%. I mean, we'll get to the ammonia thing in a sec. One of the examples we'll go over more specifically. But I can remember specifically from the whole Clarkson's Farm thing. You know, there was one woman who had a... not foot and mouth, what's the one that comes? TB scare because of badgers. And then I think what they had a herd of something like 250 cows, and they basically had to get rid of the lot, which does not mean sending them to slaughter. It means them getting killed for no purpose. You don't even get hides off them. And this is, you know, not only are the costs being imposed and all the strictures being put on them, we then have a government that is willing to support all these different ecological NGOs that are chomping at the bit for any excuse to clamp down on farming.
Yes, we talked about that during our stream on Monday, didn't we? The fact that the UK government is the Nunchtalk stream, sorry. That was last week. But in the Nunchtalk stream, we talked about the fact the UK government is funneling multiple, like, £10 million a year into a single climate change NGO to produce effectively PR for it.
Yep.
Here we have from the grocer, it's decided to paywall itself since I refreshed it, which is lovely. Fuck you, the grocer. This paywall stuff is just so... It's genuinely terrible the way that the internet's segmented like that for effectively newswire news. Yep. This, by the way, is a copied and pasted Reuters article.
But you should pay for it.
Yeah, so if you look at the grocers, you're a copy and pasting hack. Go fuck yourself. But again, this is why we just tend to archive everything as well. And I thought that a site that was a bit particular like this wouldn't decide, oh, 0 out of 1 articles left.
But alas, you are wrong.
But alas, I am wrong. Actually, you know what? I'll have a look, see if there is in the archives, just because there was a couple of bits I wanted to pick out. There we go. See, the grocer, people don't have to pay. The internet just works around you. British food trapped in Europe as pork chaos spreads. Numerous shipping lines have begun circumventing Felixstowe port and heading straight to Europe in order to avoid the worst disruption caused by increased import volumes and a lack of empty shipping containers.
Complete nonsense. I have reason to believe that most of the stuff that's happened in ports in the UK for the last 18 months, if not a little bit longer, has almost universally been a consequence of bad COVID policy and lockdown stuff,
yeah,
and the slow but sure implementation of automated systems for dealing with freight, which seemed to universally not work.
Also, there was just increased volume because our crop yields collapsed. On top of all that, yes, and also incessant strikes and interference by the French authorities, basically attempting to make Britain suffer,
yep,
because it won't be part of the one world government, or at least it won't in a performative sense. But anyway, a lot of this, again, blamed on Brexit, but we see that as the supply chains break down, as the farming breaks down, as imports increase, there's not the capacity to do that because, one, yeah, you're right, wrong-headed COVID policy, automation, basically the ports don't run anymore.
No.
So that's creating a situation where this 80% of food cannot be imported. And that's what's causing, again, a lot of the combined shortages is a fuck you attitude on domestic production because of climate change, because they want the farms to close, and also a wrongheadedness on port policy because they want to make everything automated but don't have the competency.
Yep.
I will say that our next section, some of the stuff we talk about comes from the fact that we watch Harry's Farm and also Clarkson's Farm.
Yes.
Some of, I think, the best programming I've seen in a long time, simply because it's able to raise these issues in a format that people will watch.
I see. This is one of those. It is one of the few places and things I am, like, secretly hopeful about. Is that I'll be honest. I don't think Harry, when he does this stuff, is as politically motivated. But I do wonder if, to some extent, what Clarkson does with Clarkson's Farm is just like an operation of pure farce. You know, this is the struggle, and at some point, the purpose of showing you the struggle is to maybe alleviate that in some way, as is the cause with all good propaganda.
But yes,
we shall see.
We shall see. I think honestly, it's just that reality is deeply red pilling.
Well, that is also the case. I mean, that's why the Harry's Farm stuff works so well recently, because he, in the last year or so, has basically been through the whole gamut of all the problems to do with farming, and one of the most specific instances of it is the combination of uncertainty making oilseed rape, which we'll get to and later on, is a very important crop for a number of reasons. But
yeah,
in 2022, I believe he was able to grow rapeseed oil and basically make something like 150 to 200 pounds a hectare on that rapeseed oil.
Yes.
He then grew it this year and has lost money per hectare because of just the uncertainty. The price of rapeseed oil changes month to month. The fertilizer prices, you know, basically they quadrupled at some point between end of 2022, start of 2023, which is the point of the year within which people buy their fertilizer.
Yeah.
And because they had no idea whether or not it was going to be more or less expensive by the end of this year, which has actually turned out to be cheaper, they all bought it then because they need it.
Like I said, the issue is farming needs stable prices. It needs stable energy prices, stable fertilizer prices. It needs stable prices for selling goods as well. It needs a market which you can have along planning horizons. And every episode, really, we've seen for the last, really, 6 months, I'd say this has been cropping up as just like a headline thing of like, we can't make money, we don't know. I don't want to, as we'll come to later, rewild my farm or let my fields go. I want to grow something. Mm. But it is basically suicidal for UK farmers to plant crops.
Well, it's just, let's say, you know, to work through the example that we're going further through here, he chooses to use those fields he did at a previous time to grow a similar amount of oilseed rape. And there is, you know, basically a 10% chance that makes similar to or more money than a wheat crop would.
Well, it's not...
If you know for a guaranteed fact that you can turn around to the government, not grow anything in the field but scrub or brush or, you know, stuff for the insects or the birds or whatever sort of stuff they want you to qualify growing, and you're guaranteed X price per hectare that is probably higher than the profit you could expect from, you know, oilseed rape, then why wouldn't you do it if you want to keep your farm working?
Well, rapeseed oil is a staple product, and oilseed rape is a staple crop for a large part of UK farming. I'm using it as a work example because it is quite a universal thing. In 2020, obviously the yields collapsed because of issues, because of the lockdowns, and the price of oilseed rape futures increased. So people planted oilseed rape. What happened subsequently is there was a gentle rise. There was a rise up here as energy costs increase, and then plummets.
And then it plummeted a month before it was cropped.
Yes. Then it plummeted. It plummeted a month before. It turns out everybody had been reading these price signals. A lot of people planted it, and because of market confluences, basically as everyone came to harvest it, the price collapsed. Which isn't usual. There are usual kind of gentle curves around this, but it doesn't usually look like this. You can see the spike and drop there, which is kind of the croppings thing, but it kind of goes up and goes to where it was. This has gone up and then continued to crash. As we see on this graph here, oilseed rape is in free fall. And a lot of people who have bet on this, a lot of people who have planted it, have lost out.
Yep.
And that has been a story that Harry's Farm talked about. It's a story everywhere. And if you're not making money, if you can't predictably get your staple crops to, you know, yield per hectare is quite narrow. Those of you who do farming, there's a couple of you in the chat, which is kind of, well, not surprising. A lot of people on the sharp end of things do watch our show. But if you are in farming, you understand that this is just deadly. It just, one, it demoralizes you, but two, it also makes you have to look at the other alternatives. Here's another one. You talk about, which is the fact that oilseed rape, the cabbage stem flea beetle, which they have been disallowed from using pesticides to kill, is just decimating crops.
Year on year on year, every new sort of insecticide that they come up for killing this, which would normally, you know, I think they say rapeseed oil, cabbage stems, any sort of stem, leafy green sort of plant will be attacked by this beetle, which in certain places in the UK we have a lot of.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting sort of point, which I was sort of considering as well, that they mentioned directly in the article here.
Yeah.
There's a problem because we don't have oilseed rape as a vital component of UK agriculture. It is used to generate rapeseed oil and generates about $750 million for the UK economy. Crucially, oilseed rape is also a key rotation crop, which farmers grow to refresh the soil and keep pests off other major crops down. This means that if oilseed rape losses are so high that farmers abandon it as a crop, it could lead to shortages in other crops such as wheat. The husks of oilseed rape are also very high in protein and are used for a lot of animal feed. And it's one of those, again, another one of those instances where because the knock-on effects of the complexities of farming are not considered in policy. Not only is it a case of that we don't have rapeseed oil, but say now the country produces overall 5 to 8% less wheat overall because fallow fields that would have rapeseed oil put on them no longer do, and the wheat that's grown around it becomes harder to grow.
Well, the answer to all of this, to many people, seems to be rewilding and fallow crops. Because of price unpredictability, for many, the subsidies to grow fallow crops or do rewilding are really the only way you can make profit without risk. You get a guaranteed yield per hectare. If you can figure out your costs, if the yield per hectare is higher than your cost, it is a no-risk way to at least break even.
Yes.
Because many farmers, and again, the Harry's Farm stuff is very good at him gently stressing this, that he does not want to go into these crops for his own reasons. Oh. If he was doing it purely on a financial basis, because he's independently wealthy. Mm. He's an independently wealthy man. He is. You know, Harry's Garrett and all that. But if he wasn't, he was somebody on the ragged edge, he would just go, I need to...
He would sell the whole thing for a rewilding scheme, and he would probably sell it on for a couple of million quid to some baroness who borrows the money from Barclays to turn it into a rewilding facility on which the land provides nothing to nobody and is damaged to an extent that to make it arable land again would expend decades of energy.
Well, there's a lot of incentives for fallow crops. They don't have an article about this because it's not a problem that's talked about outside of agriculture.
No.
Honestly, the main source of this I've seen has both been Clarkson's Farm and Harry's Farm. It's been from farmers directly because no one wants to talk about this stuff. They are on paper a good idea for soil enrichment, but with the rest of the food system currently how it is, it doesn't accomplish anything other than incentivize non-food production.
Well, this is the reason why so many farmers were growing oilseed rape.
Yeah.
Because it does provide the same benefits as a fallow crop, but you get an end product out of it, and it also benefits the rest of your crops.
Yes.
And the government has decided to make as many moves as they can to essentially make farming that one crop that acts as a one-fit-all sort of solution for this, and then banned it.
Well, there's also the... on Harry's farm, he's talking about being... He always says legume, really funny.
Legumes.
A legume crop. But he had his doubts whether or not that would work as a fallow crop. He basically said that the stuff people incentivize to grow isn't very good. It doesn't do the soil enrichment it's supposed to. If he wasn't being paid by the government to do it, he'd consider it basically a waste of time, even as a fallow exercise. So the wrong types of fallow crops are possibly being incentivized. I'm not an expert on fallow crops, but it doesn't seem that the farmers are very enthused by what they're being encouraged to grow. There's also, as we talked about previously, the rewilding stuff here, because we did do... Actually, I'll just put it in the chat if you want to watch it afterwards. It's not a particularly well-viewed stream, to be honest, but our rewilding stream, I think, will become more and more important as time goes on. Because rewilding, for those of you who don't know, basically is paying people to let land, quote-unquote, go back to nature. Even though Britain has been an entirely managed landscape, yes, even places like the Lake District, for 1,000 years?
I would say.
Post-Great Forest.
Yeah.
Post-like Great Forest of Britain. Britain has been a very, very heavily managed landmass in a very harmonious manner for many hundreds of years. That's why it is the green and pleasant land.
Well, one of the things I consider as well from the Harry's Farm thing was that he essentially suggested that I will take on these schemes. But he did so under the presumption that in 2 or 3 years' time, the government is going to come to its senses and realise that this doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. But,
and I'm not sure if I'm with him on that.
No, I don't think he see. Well, the whole thing is that it's meant to reduce the nitrogen and carbon footprint stuff. This is from June this year. A record number of farms are for sale as Britain swaps growing food for biodiversity and holiday letting. We found in our rewilding stream that a lot of this is a land investment scam.
Mm-hmm.
It is a scam that turns worthless land that politicians and celebrities have already bought up and turns it into valuable land for these subsidized schemes. It is literally a scam.
But this to me, people always talk about, oh, our elites are incompetent, and then they talk about some gaffe or how they've done some shit-lib progressive policy or how they've done, you know, some sort of geopolitical thing that looks a bit bad for them. How do they answer for this, though? we import 80% of our food. We're going to be importing more of it very soon. Supply chains are breaking down. It's going to be very difficult in short order to possibly ship food around the world, which is how we solve that problem.
Yeah.
We are bailing people into the country by the million a year, and we're getting rid of the ways that we grow food here. Like, what? How does that work? It's, if you tried to, you wouldn't make any different moves if you were trying to starve a population.
No, you wouldn't. It seems deliberate. This is what we talked about over a year ago. We're basically a year ahead of the Sunday Times here. In the midst of the cost of living and food security crisis, an increasing number of farmers are selling up, with 16,700 acres of farmland launched to market across Britain in the first 3 months of this year. The most since 2016, and 30% more than a year ago, according to Savills. The sums simply no longer add up for many traditional farmers, particularly those of advancing years. Rather than diversify, they are selling and finding there is a high demand for their land, with high prices being driven by a new type of investor looking to buy land for rewilding, carbon sequestration, or simply as a safe investment. It also makes sure that this land gets into the hands of larger companies or the UK government. It's a great way to incentivize it. And when the rug's pulled from all of this, which I think it will be at some point, there'll be a rug pull in all of this, it means there's even more farmland for sale as the rewilding subsidies dry up and these large businesses in the UK government can simply just buy the farmland for cheap. well, a bit of a spiel I have at the end of this, but really all of this is against the backdrop of... The geopolitical situation, let's say.
I mean, God forbid what happens to, quote-unquote, Europe's breadbasket when Monsanto gets its hands on it, if they haven't already.
Well, small changes in incentives and prices can drastically change land usage. That's what we're seeing here, in that the rewilding stuff is all coming to a head, because it's actually going into a runaway cycle, in that a lot more land might be rewilded in short order than the UK government is planning for.
Yep.
Because the incentives and the prices have moved so drastically, and a lot of the farms are in such dire straits already financially that they are grasping for this as an emergency option. Well,
it goes to show again how broken the system is. You would think in a situation whereby food prices are soaring,
yeah,
our dependency on food from other countries is soaring, that the cost of food increasing would make, even despite the increased costs in Britain, the growth of food profitable. But it isn't.
Well,
even in a moment of crisis, there is no profit in growing food here.
No. In fact, the crisis makes food production worse because it creates unpredictability. You'd think that food prices rocketing would be good for food production. It's not. It's actually bad for food production. Who'd have thunk it? All of these conditions are once again due to the instability caused by the global wars of the American Empire, and it's profiteering from Europe via expensive imported US food, and especially imported LPG. All of this exists outside of the direct attacks as well on global farming for the climate, which is its own separate issue and something we've streamed about before, and we will stream about again. This is about kind of the Dutch farmer situation, but really they find themselves in a slightly political no man's land in which, to get what they really want to achieve, ultimately, they'd have to leave the EU.
Yes.
Which then they do not have the political capital to do, and I don't think they are even prepared to do or even entertain.
No.
So they find themselves politically stuck. They're talking about unseating MPs, but really the MPs and the national politicians in Europe have no power to stop this. These are centrally planned targets that mean that the Netherlands must either de-agriculturalize or be subject to massive financial fines, investigations, and possibly even people going to prison.
Yes.
So there really is no way out of this as a nation.
You've got this paragraph here. There is a sense within the global elite that they think the food system can survive any measures they impose on it. We see what happens when NGO ideas are put into practice in places like Sri Lanka, which we did, I think, a rather good stream on that subject, which is an angle people still don't seem to really want to treat that from. They either want it to be about the American Empire, or they want it to be about China, and they don't want to consider the fact that it was basically the IMF and the World Economic Forum's little sort of Lysenkoist environmental experiment to see how far you could push a populace.
That was surprising because we got a lot of complaints about that stream that we didn't know what we were talking about. And then we looked into it even closer, which resulted in a very good Belt and Road stream, actually, about the Belt and Road basically starting to collapse in some places. Russia's been much more effective simply by going in with armed, like, Russia knows that if you go somewhere with boots on the ground and men with guns, things get done. China hasn't really been able to do much of that. But
yes, practices like these in place like Sri Lanka to turn them into a food importer or to simply experiment on them. The Western farmer is beginning to feel a version of what the Rhodesian farmer once felt. His livelihood is less important than the political aims of equity, and as a result, we will all suffer. We'll suffer equitably, at least.
Yes, we will all suffer equitably, though.
The current conversations around conservation are perverted and politically neutered as they cannot reckon with the failure of managerialism to understand the natural laws of the world. They claim we can violate them indefinitely, but we clearly cannot.
Yes.
And I just want to paint the image for people. I like doing this at the end of the stream sometimes. There is a reason why they have demarcated basically everything north of the Cairngorms in Scotland as sacred, rewilded land that is owned by 1,000,006 different trusts and foundations that are otherwise probably owned by the Gates Foundation.
Yeah.
Because Zuckerberg's kids are going to inherit the earth. You're going to live in the pod. You're going to live in 2017. You're going to be eating soy grits made for Brits by Brits. And Mark Zuckerberg is going to be taking his kids on Range Rover safari up and down, you know, the Highlands of Scotland, spear hunting deer.
Basically, yes. That's what this turned into. I don't know. Maybe modern problems need modern solutions. I've always loved this post.
Are you suggesting that now that you're out of work, you're going to invest in a little bit of koi farming?
I may become the urban fish farmer, yeah. Or the suburban fish farmer.
As opposed to the soy father, you could become the koi father.
The koi father, yes. I don't think we've got much else to cover here, though. I will just say, do leave a comment and do interact with the video if you'd like to see more of them. Do click on the links down below. Do support us if you can. Go to the Substack. We have written work. There'll be more stuff coming out this week. I know it's no good to you now, but if you like this or our future streams as an audio podcast, we do put those up on the Substack for paid subscribers as well. A lot of people seem to appreciate that. A lot of complex stuff to cover today, but really there is a almost like full spectrum war going on with the agricultural industry. We are at the end point of a very long process. And the seed wars of the 90s was a real part of it. But it's the confluence of all these things that leads to the quote-unquote food insecurity situation, which is completely self-imposed. unless you have anything else to shill?
No, I was just going to thank you to the people who have decided to become members over the course of this stream and the people who have given us a super chat here and there.
Yes.
And to the bloke that mentioned having some insider information, you know, if you wish to pass it on to us, we would appreciate that, and we'll make sure it gets out there without people knowing who you are, if that's possible. Because I think, especially with the way people tend to treat issues on the online right, as it gets referred to, this is probably something we should come back to pretty often, because this is arguably more important than anything else we could cover. And the fact that there isn't at least some sort of... I know there used to be that Ice Age farmer guy that went around on Telegram and then he disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, there's like some weird cook stuff about food supplies and some strange stuff about, you know, my seed oils, my soy, this, that, and the next thing. No one seems to want to honestly tackle the issues of here's how a food supply chain works and here's why ours is broken.
Yes, it's a cliche, but you really, food should come from as locally as humanly possible to your location.
There's someone in chat there. Oh God, are we all far right here too? Well, we ain't far wrong, love. That's for sure.
It's times like these, I'm just glad I'm fat. That's pretty funny. some of you, I've seen some of you, and you will survive the winter, at least. So some of you may not. I think the stream's reaches logical endpoint though. So all I have to say is goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. I hope you like being hungry.
Goodbye. We'll see you all next week.